I'm excited to tell you that one of our favorite Radiotopia siblings, Ear Hustle, is back with a new season. Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast. Co-hosts Nigel Poor and Erlon Woods have recently been spending time at four California prisons and have a season's worth of funny, surprising, and unforgettable stories to share. In a recent episode, they were able to visit a groundbreaking prison hospice where they spoke to men who are grappling with the reality of dying inside prison. Also coming up this season are stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells, complicated mom-daughter relationships in prison, and incarcerated people who wonder whether they've become too comfortable behind bars. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the heart. I'm Caitlin Prest. If you're new to the heart, just want to let you know that this is a show about love and sex and bodies. Sometimes we make stories about things like breakups or kinks or kissing. And other times we do stories that look at big social problems like misogyny, transphobia. I'm going to tell you, newcomers and heart lovers alike, we're kind of in an intense phase right now. But that doesn't mean you can't go back and listen to the Ghost series or the First Kiss episode if you're in the mood for something light. And that is not to say that there aren't going to be light moments in what is to come, but it still warrants a trigger warning. For the past year, we've been working with documentarian and artist Tennessee Watson to craft a personal story about child sexual abuse. It's her story, and we'll be releasing it weekly for the next four episodes. And with that, I proudly introduce our newest mini-season, Silent Evidence.
I guess it's really hard to figure out where to start.
What does sexual abuse, you said the word sexual abuse to you, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I think, I mean, just to preface this, part of what's been so confusing over the last 25 years about...
I'm calling to report a crime. So, yeah, if you could give me a call back, that would be great.
You probably know way more people than you think you know who have been touched inappropriately as a kid. One in seven girls, one in 25 boys. And you can't even trust those stats because that means that someone had to come forward and actually say something. Most of the time, people say nothing. They take it upon themselves to get over it and move on. Episode 1, Not the Right Time. Here's Tennessee Watson.
Hi. My home growing up was an awesome place to be a little girl. In the Woodhall Watson home, we had Votes for Women coffee mugs, a giant poster of Georgia O'Keeffe on a motorcycle. My parents were journalists who named their only child after a 19th century anarchist, Tennessee Jane Watson. That's me.
Do you think that we should go out and see your mom?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, Bill got a video camera for his 40th birthday. And he is now filming me at my absolute worst.
Bill Watson and Nancy Woodhall always told me that if you see something unjust and you say nothing, the message that you're sending in being quiet is that you're okay with it. When I was seven, something happened that in my gut I knew was wrong. But I was quiet about it. I stayed quiet about it for decades. I wasn't sure if I should say something. It never felt like it was the right time. But now I know it never feels like the right time. So, here I am. It's hard to know where to start.
Shannon, meteor showers, jumping jacks, second base.
But I gotta start somewhere. So, I'll take us where I'm never hesitant to start things. And that's on the dance floor. It's 2006. I'm 25 years old. I've got a faux hawk and giant gold hoop earrings. I'm at an after party for a conference on queer, transgender, and feminist issues. And the DJ puts on Let the Music Play by Shannon. We all have those songs that yank us out of the present moment into our past. I'm hearing this song for the first time as an adult. I go so far inside myself that my limbs feel far away. My eyes are slow to focus as I look around for Rebecca. She's my close friend and on-again, off-again crush. It's on the tip of my tongue. Always play this song at gymnastics. My mind leaves the dance floor. I want to tell her about being 6 years old. Gymnastics. They always played this song during the warm-up. It's a class of mostly girls in multicolored leotards doing jumping jacks, bouncing our way through a warm-up routine. The song plays and I feel like a total rock star. But I'm just a little kid with a lopsided ponytail and snot on my face. The classes are run by Dr. Yousefi. He calls himself doctor because he has some sort of advanced degree in physical education. Warm-up ends and now it's time to pay attention and learn. I'm still in the groove and not so into standing still or being quiet. Dr. Yousefi stops his introduction to the balance beam and locks eyes on me. Ms. Watson, you're distracting the group. I become still and look at the floor. Oops, I'm messing up.
What's going on?
And suddenly, I'm on the dance floor again. Rebecca waiting for me to snap back to reality. Is this really how I want to tell her for the first time? Yelling over the music? It's too loud. I let the impulse to tell her go. Dr. Yousefi suggests I take private lessons. He says I need to improve my discipline. My dad and I take the long drive to his new gym in Manassas, Virginia. While I take my private lessons, Dr. Yousefi lets my dad use the gym free of charge. They'd become friends.
Huh? Pull? Pull? Huh? Back foot of
a This is a recording of one of my lessons.
Okay, do cartwheel now, Tenny. Go.
That's Dr. Yousefi telling me to do a cartwheel.
Do it again. We get faster.
On a day that sounds just like this, we start our lesson, and I want so badly to do well. Dr. Yousefi and I start off with a warm-up routine to get the blood flowing. I'm bored, so my attention drifts over to my dad in the corner of the room, jumping rope. But Dr. Yousefi needs my undivided attention. He turns a folding mat on its side to create a room divider, so that I can stay focused. It reminds me of a giant blue accordion. I can't see my dad anymore. We're all by ourselves now. We begin the straddle stretch. My legs are wide open. His are too. And we're stretching back and forth. Back and forth. Back and forth. He leans forward, close to me, and stops. He says, "Your leotard is too big." He hooks the crotch of my leotard with his fingers. He is rubbing the back of his fingers up against the bare skin of this mysterious zone in between my legs. What he's doing makes me feel sort of like I have to pee. I feel sort of electrified, and the skin he's touching changes texture and feels tight and tingly. He's telling me that he's showing me that my leotard is too big. Oops. I messed up again. I'm trying so hard to be a good kid. So when the lesson is over, I pretend like I am. And I don't tell my parents, because that means confessing I'd gotten into trouble again. I don't know if it happened many times or just once. I do remember I started getting carsick on the way to the gym. I remember feeling afraid of seeing the mats go up. I remember that after those private lessons, I lost interest in gymnastics. I quit.
Let's talk about touch. There are good touches, bad touches, and secret touches.
It's second grade. We're having a good touch, bad touch presentation. Our desks are in a big circle to create a community vibe. I'm in my navy blue sailboat shirt, straight brown hair, bangs.
It's hard to stand up to bigger kids or grown-ups, but remember, it's okay to say no.
I raise my hand. I think something like that happened to me, I say, all eyes on me. And in the front of the entire class, I do my 8-year-old best to put my secret into words. And because I wasn't sure what to call where his hands had gone, I say something about hands up shorts. Is that the kind of bad touching they're talking about? My face felt hot. I felt dumb for bringing it up. And that was it. No follow-up and no phone call home. And so I accepted this as the answer. I didn't need to talk about it again because it wasn't a big deal. It wasn't a bad touch. Phew. It's the 80s. My life as a kid moved at a pretty exciting and distracting pace. In fourth grade, we moved to Alabama, and then in fifth grade, we moved to Rochester, New York, and I was an upper-middle-class kid with plenty to do. Gymnastics is replaced by horseback riding and swimming and sailing and soccer and ice skating and skiing. And the list goes on and on. I'm 13. I'm horny and figuring out what to do with that. I hide my chunky body under baggy tees, baggy shorts. I dress like a Beastie Boy. Except I wear black eyeliner and silver lipstick. Guess that's a Beastie Girl. I don't know. I'm getting a ride home from Johnny in his grandma's old pickup truck. We're rubbing up against each other. He's in the middle. I'm on the passenger side. He slips his hand up my shorts. It feels good. I'm flattered. But I also feel trapped. I go on autopilot. It's almost like I'm looking back at myself from outside the car. I'm in my driveway. I do my best to act like everything is normal. I'm officially a teenager now. Fingering is something people do for fun. It's exciting and sexy. When I dished to my friend on the phone, she asked me if it was my first time. I don't know what to say. Yes? Sort of. There was this one time, but that was different. It's 1996. I'm 15. I've traded in Guns N' Roses and LL Cool J for Courtney Love, Queen Latifah, Ani DeFranco. With the help of Ani, I'm learning what it means to have someone treat your body like it doesn't belong to you. I watch it happen again and again. And again and again, I don't stop it. One afternoon, I'm riding my bike with my friends, and a dude in a car is following us. He asks a muffled question to get us close to his window, flashes his penis. And what hurts is that I do nothing. I could have screamed, "Fuck you, you dirty dick motherfucker." I could have said, "Hey, Johnny, can we start with a kiss?" I could have leaned back and pushed over the mats. But I don't, and I didn't. I freeze. I slink away from the car. I go home. I quit gymnastics. I say nothing. I avoid it and let them walk free with no awareness that they did something wrong. The person I decide could help me figure this out is my mom, the feminist, the journalist. She'd get to the bottom of this. But she works a lot and is on the road constantly. When my mom and I do find time to hang, it's hard to interrupt those special moments. What am I supposed to do? In the midst of buying fishnets or picking out hair dye? Be like, hey, mom, coach touched my junk. Not so much. I didn't have to make a decision about whether to tell her or not because when I was 15, she was diagnosed with cancer. It was the wrong time to bring this up. April 1st, 1997, 5:26 a.m. No time felt more wrong than her death. We're a family that prides ourselves on our ability to keep it moving. So after my mom died, that's what we did. The next day, 7:32 a.m., the bell rings and I'm back to school. Getting a driver's license, applying to college, going to punk shows. I don't give myself much time to think. Bear witness to the power unseen, like a fiend's dream, stimulating means, transmitting through the I'm 19. It's the spring semester of my first year at Colby College. Feminism makes me feel like I'm allowed to say what Yousefi did was a violation, an abuse of power. It's a sunny day. I'm sitting in my dorm room at my desk. My roommate leaves for class. I pick up the phone. I tell my dad, I call him Bill, that something had happened with Dr. Yousefi behind the mats. I'm ready for him to evaluate whether it really was a big deal. But he doesn't ask for details. He just asks me what I want to do about it. And I say, I don't know. After college and through my 20s, I didn't talk about it much. I did what I needed to do. I named it as something that was not okay, and I said it out loud. Time to move on. My 20s are ripe with adventure.
Oh, we're picking up speed now.
Bueno, me llamo Tennessee y vengo de los
Estados Unidos. And you are listening to Renegade Radio with DJ Tennessee on WMHB Waterville.
Riding freight trains, biking across the country, hitting dance floor after dance floor, and finally, moving back to Washington, D.C., just a couple miles from where I lived as a kid. It's 2009, I'm 28 years old. I still have a faux hawk, subtler than before. I'm hooking up with a guy named Adam. One night, we drive out to the burbs in my truck to lay in the back under blankets and watch a meteor shower. We're pulling off Route 66, headed out to the darkness of a Civil War battleground. And I realize I've taken this exit before. We go right, but I'm pretty sure the gym is off to the left. There are thousands of shooting stars out there in the darkness. What I see are the mats, the walls of the gym. Over the next year, I keep thinking about the gym off the highway and how I want to go back. It's obvious I'm not going to let this go. Maybe if I face it, I'll feel better.
Go through Frederick. Frederick, Maryland. Frederick, Maryland. Gettysburg.
I'm 29. I'm with my dad. He thinks he's here to help me move to New York City. I've got another plan. We just had a couple beers and some oysters. We're sitting on a park bench in D.C.
Every time you've come to visit me, I've thought about asking you to do this.
part of me would really just rather avoid this topic for the rest of my life, but I can't avoid it. You know, okay. It always comes up again and again. But I would really like to get in the car and drive to gymnastics class. I don't know why. I don't know, you know, going back there, what it's going to do. But
that's cool.
I'm in something.
Should we take my car or should we take your truck?
Okay. Well, where are we going?
GMS Gymnastics.
Yeah, we're...
At 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Maybe if I face it, it'll make me feel better. If I go to the gym, I might be able to finally
Luke
process
Court,
the memory.
Nathan Court,
let it go.
Gabe Court.
New Market Court. It's in here somewhere.
It's right here.
Really?
Right there.
GMS Institute. You wanna come?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, you used to go in and you'd change over there somewhere.
Drink some water out of the water fountain. So anticlimactic.
And I used to work out over there, so the mats that he would put up would be over here somewhere.
Yeah. How's it feel to be standing in front of GMS Gymnastics?
Well, it feels very strange right now. How's it feel to you? That's what it's about.
It's not traumatic or anything. It's just fucking weird. Oh, man. All right, let's go home. I'm tired.
Let's go. It keeps going.
Oh, great.
From too uncertain to speak to laughing with my dad in this parking lot only took me 22 freaking years.
So there it is, fun and fit. GMS Gymnastics.
They say that only 1 out of every 10 survivors will report. I guess I should feel good about finally getting it out of my mouth.
Bye, GMS Gymnastics.
Tomorrow, I'll pack a U-Haul and try once again to leave what happened in Virginia behind.
This has been episode 1 of Silent Evidence. Next week, we're going to follow Tennessee back to the gym. Only this time, it's open.
Hi.
Hey, I'm Tennessee.
Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
Fine, come on in.
That's next week. Silent Evidence is produced by me, Caitlin Prest, and Tennessee Watson. Editing by Sharon Mashihi. And of course, none of this would be possible without Mitra Kaboli. Special help on this episode from Brendan Baker and an entire village of ears. Samara Brieger, Sarah Kramer, Alan Watts, Ida Benedetto, Audrey Quinn, Pike Malinowski, Martinez de Rosta, Lola Haha, and those who came to our test screenings. Thanks to Rebecca Miel and Kirsten Lattner for recording reenactments that we ended up cutting. If you want to talk about this series, use hashtag Silent Evidence Project on Twitter. If you're curious about this issue and you want more info, there are tons of resources on Tennessee's website, silenteevidenceproject.org. This project is made possible with funding from the IWMF, Howard Buffett Fund for Women Journalists. Thanks also to MailChimp and the Knight Foundation for supporting Radiotopia shows.
I'm might fall asleep now.
That's not fair.
Why not?
Because I gotta drive home. No, you can fall asleep.
I always fell asleep when I was a kid in the car.
Yeah.
If I fall asleep, are you gonna fall asleep?
No. I'm fine.
Radiotopia.